for organizing this this one-day conference. I think it's wonderful timing, and we have a number of really wonderful talks in this session, so I'm really pleased to be able to introduce these individuals. The first one who will be speaking is Professor Roger Pritchard, and it's an especially a pleasure for me to introduce Roger. Roger is somebody I've known for over 20 years. He, in fact, is a person that hired me when I came to McGill University over 20 years ago at the Institute of Parasitology, and I've learned a lot from Roger over the years as well, so it's a real pleasure for me to introduce Roger. Roger's a professor at the Institute, but he was also brought to the Institute as a director and oversaw the expansion of the Institute of Parasitology and really brought up the visibility of the Institute of Parasitology. Because of that, he was appointed Dean of Research at McGill University, where he served and oversaw the complete research at McGill. He's also been the principal of the University of West Indies. He's an advisor to the World Health Organization and to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. He's won numerous awards in biochemistry and pharmacology, which I don't have time to go through all of them. But Roger really is a leading world expert in filariasis and nematode infections in humans, and really has driven this research area largely through a lot of the work he's done through the World Health Organization. So I think he's the right person to be giving this talk at this time. So we'll welcome Roger.
Thank you, Greg, for those kind words. It's certainly my task and my great pleasure to my passion to talk about some of the parasitic diseases, which are really the most neglected of the neglected diseases. And there's lots of exciting things happening at the present time in this area, which perhaps will make them a little bit less neglected. And I'll talk about some of these things. So the focus of the talk will be on, firstly, just to briefly introduce these diseases that are caused by helminth parasites. These are worms. Something about the burden of the disease, the fact that these are all very much diseases of poverty and of poor people and also keep people poor. There's lots happening now in terms of mass treatment programs, which is actually very exciting. And there's a lot of new opportunities in terms of donations from foundations and governments. There's also some new initiatives which are which are making a big difference, community-directed treatment, and in the integration of some of these programs, so treatments for various diseases being integrated, which offers great opportunities. But there are challenges, of course. There's the challenge of compliance in terms of the treatments. There's sustainability, because a lot of these treatments are not curative. They reduce the morbidity and transmission, but they're not curative. Resources, of course, because they go on and on for years and decades. Donor fatigue is a serious thing we should be aware of. The treatment outcomes, sometimes they're still far less than optimal. And unfortunately now we're also seeing problems of developing drug resistance, and there is a real need to monitor efficacy and the impacts of these interventions. The diseases I'm going to talk about, lymphatic filariasis, onchocerciasis, another filarial disease, sometimes called river blindness, salt-transmitted helminths, these are, for example, the gastrointestinal nematodes, and schistosomiasis. The first three are nematode infections, and schistosomiasis is a trematode infection. Now, in terms of the burden of some of these diseases, so this table attempts to summarize, and a lot of the data is based on a recent paper from Peter Hotez and colleagues in The Lancet this year. Lymphatic filariasis, so this is dailies, or daily adjusted life years. So these are life years lost due to mortality or significant disability. So lymphatic filariasis, 5.8 million dailies per year. Not a lot of deaths, but a huge impact in terms of development and people's quality of their lives, social impacts. Global prevalence is quite high, 120 million people infected. Control is being attempted now with mass drug administrations using combinations of albendazole plus diethylcarbamazine or albendazole and ivermectin. The salt-transmitted nematodes, the hookworms, Ascaris and Trichuris infections, again, very large numbers of dailies, disability-adjusted life years, some deaths, huge numbers of people infected, and again, treatment programs, mass drug administration programs, largely with albendazole, and other benzimidazoles like mebendazole. Onchocerciasis is less widespread, mainly I'll show you in Africa and Central and South America, but it does cause a lot of morbidity, not a lot of deaths, about 37 million people infected, and treatment's been going on for over 20 years now with ivermectin in mass drug administration programs. Schistosomiasis causes a lot of morbidity and significant numbers of deaths as well. Quite a lot of people infected and a lot at risk, and basically we have one drug, Prosequantel, that's used there for mass drug administration programs. With lymphatic filariasis, there's about 1.2 billion people at risk in spread over 83 countries. You can see the ones colored in red here. So much of the tropical world. The biggest problems are occurring in India, Indonesia, Nigeria, Bangladesh. These account for 70% of the global problem with lymphatic filariasis. And just in India alone, the estimated economic cost is around about $1 billion US a year. The pathology is listed here, lymphedema, hydrocele, elephantiasis, impaired mobility, and also a very significant social problem, social stigma. With salt-transmitted helminths, so these are the causal agents are all nematode worms, Ascaris lumbricoides, and significant impact on the development of children, their growth, their cognitive development, and the physical fitness. Similarly with Trichuris, but in addition it can cause more acute symptoms such as rectal prolapse, and hookworms. And hookworms are mainly caused by two hookworms, Nicator americanus or Anclostomum duodenale, and these cause significant anemia in children and pregnant women, as well as impairing growth and cognitive development. They affect globally something like 2 billion people, so it's a huge proportion of the world population. And again, globally, somewhere between 3 and 24 million dailies per year. And the worst situations are in sub-Saharan Africa, the Americas, and in Southeast Asia. They're in a darker color here in this global map. Onchocerciasis is a little more focused. It's also known as river blindness, and it causes blindness, visual impairment, and a very severe skin pathology, which is often overlooked. It greatly reduces people's ability to support themselves, generate income, incur significant health expenditures, but it also has a very significant impact on development because it affects the ability of people to live and work in some of the most fertile lands around rivers. and it does reduce life expectancy. There are some major programs. There was the onchocerciasis control program in West Africa, which was sort of a pioneer program in terms of mass drug administration. And then after that, there were the APOC programs throughout the rest of Africa. And in the Americas, in Central and South Americas, the onchocerciasis elimination program of the Americas. Most of the control these days is ivermectin distribution. Originally in West Africa, there was a lot of vector control, but that's very expensive because they had to use helicopters and aeroplanes to spray the rivers, and it had a lot of biological fallout as well. There's still areas in Central Africa that need further epidemiological surveys. And schistosomiasis is a huge problem occurring in much of the tropical world in Asia, Africa. three different species are involved. It's the second most serious or economically devastating parasitic disease after malaria, and it causes anemia, malnutrition, development effects on the liver and the spleen and the lungs and the bladder and so forth, and can the hematobium can cause bladder cancer. It's found in 74 tropical countries, as I mentioned, three species, and essentially these days we only have one drug, which is praziquantel. It has to be purchased, but it's fairly relatively inexpensive. It's 18 cents a dose, but that's a lot of money in developing countries. There's about over 400 million doses or tablets needed globally per year to treat for schistosomiasis. So big programs for mass drug administration. Some of the most of these diseases are now being treated with mass drug administration programs. So we have, for lymphatic filariasis, we have national programs which are being coordinated through the global program for the elimination of lymphatic filariasis. And as I mentioned, albendazole with DEC or albendazole plus ivermectin are being used to reduce transmission and arrest the progression of the disease. But the drugs are not curative. They don't get rid of the adult parasites, unfortunately. It's also coupled with the topical sanitation of the affected limbs to reduce secondary infections from bacteria and fungi. We're very fortunate that the albendazole is being donated for this program by GlaxoSmithKline, pharmaceutical company coming to the rescue. It's donating, getting close to 200 million doses a year, so it's a big donation. And globally, they've over the years, they've donated more than 1 billion doses, and it's an ongoing commitment without a time limit. Ivermectin's also being donated by Merck as Mectazan, and they've donated over 450 million doses so far. And again, it's an ongoing commitment from this company. DEC has to be purchased, but it is a very inexpensive drug, fortunately. Obviously, because these treatments are not curative, compliance after it becomes a problem. And also, there's the problem of ineligible people, pregnant women, for example, or infants. Albendazole and ivermectin also have significant collateral benefits because the albendazole and the ivermectin also help control some of the soil-transmitted helminths. There's also, because lymphatic filaria are transmitted by mosquitoes, some of the bed net programs and the insecticide spraying of houses to reduce malaria transmission can also be helpful in reducing transmission of lymphatic filariasis. There's significant donations coming from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and other sources of support for these elimination programs. So we're very fortunate about this. And there's great opportunities in research and in helping with these programs to be successful. Some of the health impacts from these mass drug administrations. So as I mentioned, for lymphatic filariasis, there's also the spin-off that the soil-transmitted infections can also be reduced. So, you know, there's about 56 million children being treated for to prevent lymphatic filariasis or reduce transmission, and there's a spin-off then for their cell-transmitted helminths for eliminating or at least clearing them out of these children at the time of treatment, but they do get reinfected, unfortunately. So this has the collateral benefits of increasing appetite, weight gain, growth, cognition. There's improvements also in eye health and coordination. Abilities in school improve. And also the impact on women, so that removing, for example, the hookworms, there's an impact on women's health and therefore on infants, increased birth weights by up to 50 grams, just as a result of this treatment for lymphatic filariasis, and a reduction of up to 40% in maternal mortality. So huge indirect spin-offs from these programs. So we're very fortunate about these aspects. The treatments do other things as well. Didn't move. Okay. So there's also impacts because ivermectin's being used in sub-Saharan Africa. So there's impacts on onchocerciasis, transmission and morbidity, on some of the ectoparasites like scabies and lice, because ivermectin is fairly effective against these ectoparasites. So there's a lot of people being treated in Africa for lymphatic filariasis, many of them in the onchocerciasis endemic areas, and so they're benefiting. And then in addition, these spin-offs against scabies. And in some cases, you can actually get elimination of the scabies after two rounds of treatment. And this results in things like improved sleep patterns and well-being. People are not itching all the time. Protection from various secondary infections, such as streptococcal infections, these complicate the secondary, the scabies infections. Now, there's some recent years, some massive programs to use mass drug administration for cell-transmitted helminths. So there's the new program, Deworm the World, being supported as a part of the Clinton Initiative. Fresh program's been going for some years, funded by the World Bank and many other programs, and many national programs. The main treatments are the benzimidazole drugs, particularly treating school-aged children with albendazole or mebendazole. Tend to get a little bit better efficacy with albendazole. Albendazole is being donated by, as I mentioned before, by Glaxo for the lymphatic filariasis control program, and so there's a spin-off on the cell-transmitted helminths. And in recent years, Johnson & Johnson have started to donate mebendazole for the control of cell-transmitted helminths. We have good efficacy of albendazole against Ascaris, but not so good efficacy against hookworms, only in the range of 50 to 70%, and against Trichuris even worse, typically 30 to 50%. So not very good in terms of being curative. And then also the children or the people get reinfected very rapidly. And recently we have cases of efficacy failure, and we find in some of our work, the mutations that are associated with benzimidazole resistance are found in the Cater and also in Trichuris. So there is a problem that with these massive drug rollouts, we're going to develop an increasing problem of drug resistance that we need to monitor for. With onchocerciasis, we've had mass drug administration with ivermectin for about more than 20 years now in West Africa. And that's progressed from the sort of commando approach where teams of healthcare personnel went in and treated communities to community-directed treatment with ivermectin. And this is a great breakthrough. So basically, in communities, in villages, somebody's trained to administer the ivermectin and to keep records. And they do a very good job in most communities. And the people, it's given on a weight basis, but the proxy for weight is just to measure the height of the people. So they get one, two, three, or four tablets. And so it's not too complicated. And the drug is donated free by Merck. And the idea is to try and treat as much of the eligible population as possible. So pregnant women and children under 5 years are not treated, but everyone else is encouraged to come for treatment. And usually the heads of the villages encourage this. And it's had a huge impact on the incidence of blindness and skin disease. It kills the microfilaria and inhibits their production by the adult worms for several months. And this reduces morbidity because most of the morbidity is caused by the microfilaria, and also the transmission because it's the microfilaria that are transmitted stage. But it does not kill the adult parasites. So they have to be treated each 6 months or each year. It's not curative, unfortunately. The public health problem has been markedly reduced, but we've had over 20 years now of distribution. Transmission's reduced, but we still see transmission, unfortunately, and now we're seeing ivermectin resistance in Onchocercovulus in West Africa. And we need to do something about monitoring because it's a problem if we're doing the treatments but we're not getting the efficacy. There's also the problem of where there's co-infection with lower, we can have severe adverse events with ivermectin treatment occasionally. Schistosomiasis, this is largely national mass drug administration programs, particularly targeting school children, Prosiquantel. So I mentioned it's about 18 cents a dose. One of the concerns we have is that it's essentially the only drug that's now available. There are a few older drugs that could be resurrected, but they're not currently in production and available. It's effective against the adult parasite, but not very effective against the juvenile stages. So it doesn't remove all the parasites in the person at the time. There's little immunity. There's some, but people do get reinfected. And there have been some reports of Prosiquantel resistance. It doesn't seem to be a widespread problem. And, of course, compliance and lack of resources, because it has to be purchased and distributed, are important problems. There's also been attempts to control it through the vector control. It's transmitted via a snail, but not terribly successfully. It's hard to control the snails. So we have some great opportunities now with these neglected tropical diseases. Mass drug administration is being rolled out on a huge scale with literally billions of people coming under treatment. We have community-directed treatment, so it's inexpensive to do the treatment. We have drugs being donated on a huge scale, so this is really a significant improvement in the situation for doing something about these diseases. And we have donors who are willing to help with the distribution, with some of the monitoring, not enough of the monitoring, and some of the epidemiological mapping and so forth. We're having huge impacts on morbidity. And the other thing is that it's often not recognized that the World Bank has calculated that the benefits to the costs of these control of these neglected tropical diseases produce some of the greatest benefits of any types of intervention in terms of development that one can do. So this is a great investment for the world in terms of trying to do something to improve health and development in developing countries. And it's also another significant step is to try and integrate these different control programs. And this is leading to cost benefits and also health benefits. But we do have challenges, of course. Compliance is a major thing. These control programs are not curative, and so you have to keep on repeating the treatments year after year, and compliance, people get sick of it, and donors get sick too of it, and so compliance becomes a problem. We have ineligible populations such as pregnant women, so that affects the impacts on transmission. There's obviously a lack of resources, but the donations of the drugs and the donor agencies like the Gates Foundation and developed countries and so forth are helping. But all of these things are under the shadow, if you like, of the big three, HIV, malaria, and TB, and so they get a lot less resources and attention than these other important diseases. Another problem is the poor efficacy of some of these drugs, unfortunately. And research is needed to improve the treatments and improve the drugs. The mass drug administrations are not curative, so we have to consider how many years can we sustain these mass drug administrations. And this is a problem in the communities. It's the problem of donor fatigue. Most donors, you know, are happy to fund something for a few years, but they want a quick and easy fix. And we can't offer that, really, even though they sometimes think they're getting it. We have the adverse events, sometimes to ivermectin in people with heavy lower infections, particularly in places like the Cameroon and Nigeria and Congo. We're also seeing now development of drug resistance in Onkosirka, looks like also in Nicator and Trichuris, and some evidence that it could occur in lymphatic filariasis. We at least see some of the genetic changes that are associated with resistance, and it's also been seen in schistosomes. We have very few drugs and no drugs in the pipeline, and this is a real concern. We if we have resistance, we're really going to be in a pickle. And you know, there are limited research funds. One of the problems we're facing is such a small proportion of funding for research and training of personnel to work in these areas goes into these neglected tropical diseases. But there are huge opportunities and you can have a huge impact. So just to conclude, we have a lot going on with the control of these helminthic neglected tropical disease. They produce huge returns on the investments in terms of human health and development, and reduce sufferings and the social impacts. The numbers of people affected is just mind-boggling. It's just monumental. The current tools, unfortunately, are inadequate. We have current tools that are useful, but there are a lot of deficiencies in those tools. Problem of compliance and sustainability. Resistance is developing because we have so few drugs and they're used repeatedly, the same drugs, year after year. It does appeal to donors. We're seeing more interest from governments and foundations, but there is the problem of donor fatigue and the lack of realism of some of the donors in seeing this as something that really has to be sustained in the long term. Or more research done so that we can end up with a greater chance of elimination. There's a lack of resources in the endemic countries, but a growing realization in endemic countries of the importance of these programs. There's a lack of research, very little in the way of a drug pipeline, and we need to do much more in terms of efficacy monitoring and monitoring for resistance development, and we need more people who are trained to work with these diseases and on the research. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Roger. The way we're going to proceed is that we're going to have the three speakers give their talks, which are going to be about 20 minutes each, and afterwards we'll open up the we'll open it up. Then the speakers will then join us at the table, and then we'll open this up for discussion. So.